It'll be good talking to you because I certainly enjoyed Hot Flashes. And I've reached the point now that while this book focuses on women, their relationship to each other and their relationship to men, I've reached the point that I don't consider books women's books or men's books
anymore.
Good,
that's a big breakthrough. Good.
So I think the book is as readable to a man as it would be to a woman, and I presume that you meant it that way.
Yes, I hope it is. And so far the responses suggest that men who really like women a lot like the book a lot, and other men, some other men have some other troubles with it.
And yet something kind of puzzles me a little bit. As time goes on and the sexes seem to be closer to each other, in many, at least socially, in many respects, there does seem to be a mystery about the two sexes that hasn't been solved yet. The men, for example, in Hot Flashes are never quite clear. They seem to be, I don't mean clear in the sense that they're not vivid portraits, but I mean they seem to be going about their own business, doing their own things in a way that is almost mystifying to the women involved. Is that accurate?
Right. Well, I think men and women, I got two things to say about that. I think you say men and women are closer now than they have been. And I do, and I think they are. I think we're about ready, perhaps, to make up men and women because the 70s separated us a lot. And I think now that we're in the 80s, we're all kind of mellowing out. I think we're going to get closer together again and like each other more, mostly because women have had more male experiences in the world. We've been out in the world longer, and it's not so great out here, and longer than we had been previously. And it's not as great out here as we might have hoped for. And I think we have a better understanding of the male experience in our culture. And What was the second? What was the question you asked?
Well, I'd like to ask you something about what you said. You said that the 70s had kind of created a problem here. I wonder about that. It seemed to me that 50 years ago or 100 years ago, the sexes were differentiated more than they are today because women had a specific role that they couldn't get out of. And this is, of course, not true today. So I was kind of puzzled. It seemed to me that the 70s were almost breakthrough years for women.
Well, you see, I date the women's movement, the feminist movement, from the late 60s and into the early 70s. And a lot of anger came out then. Remember, you know, women, they were called women's libbers, and we were an angry bunch. And I think following the first flush of the feminist movement, there were some real hard feelings between the sexes. Women were angry about their past, how they had been relegated to a specific predefined role and programmed to behave in a certain way. A lot of the anger came out in the 70s, and there was a lot of divergence between the sexes and divorces of longtime marriages and changes. When people talk about post-feminism today, maybe it's boring to use all these titles and try to define them, I think they're talking about the beginning of a reconciliation between men and women. Men have finally acknowledged the kinds of lives women lead, the responsibilities that we internalize and handle. And women, I think, are more familiar with the big outside world and better understand the male experience. A lot of anger has been dissipated, and we're of an age now I think we would like to make up with our... I think a lot of women would like to make up with their biological husbands, the fathers of their children, of their first marriages, and get close, have a closer relationship and friendship with ex-husbands, ex-lovers.
Let's talk about generations. You are writing about a specific generation of women, and I think that it parallels your own to a certain degree. What has made this generation different, do you think, than other generations of women?
I think the generation of women now in their 40s and approaching menopause, their hot flash period, have been through more changes in their lifetime than any other group that I've been able to identify historically. We were the Depression babies and grew up in the 40s and 50s, 60s and 70s and 80s. This is the wildest half century that short of a complete political revolution, I've never heard of so much social change in half a century. And we went through every one of those changes, one after another. They took a toll. They were tough. And so my poor generation of women, we didn't even have a name associated with us. we just went through all these changes, and here we are at what my mother called the change of life, and nobody seemed to recognize our contributions to our society, the monumental efforts we made to hold things together, and where we are now, at the, you know, turning point, the pause in our lives. And we didn't seem to have much acknowledgement or recognition of what we've done. And we weren't even very convinced that we ourselves were a generation that could be identified and evaluated.
Let's talk a little bit about the characters in the book. Barbara Raskin, the four women in the book, are all different. And how did you come to create these characters? Were they composites of people that you have known?
They are. I wanted to create a biography of our generation, and I try to find women who reflected many of the common experiences that we've shared and reflected certain values that many of us hold, and I tried to make these as composite characters as I possibly could and pull in as many horror stories as I had heard and all that, and as many adventures as we had been through, and try to write. The story is told from a first-person plural point of view. I try to write the autobiography of my generation. I know it's a bit ambitious sounding, but that's what I wanted to do.
Well, I certainly felt it, and I think you succeeded to a large degree. We talk about the term hot flashes. Of course, we know what that means in a biological sense, but there are other things. I believe you, I can't remember, it's been some weeks since I read the book, but I believe you refer to, I think there's a star, a comet or something in the sky is a hot flash, too. I mean, the imagery runs
through
the...
flashes of lightning in the sky.
Yeah, the imagery does run through the book. Well, let's talk about hot flashes. This does mean a change biologically in a woman, a change that men aren't supposed to have. I've heard the term male menopause. I'm not sure what that means, unless it's just a burning out. But for a woman, it's a more dramatic change, isn't it? Tell me a little bit about that.
It is indeed. Of course, when I first got my hot flashes, I didn't know what they were, and I thought, you know, the house was overheated or something. And by the time I realized, this is it, this is what we get, this is the last little ironic touch experience we go through, I wanted to make something of them. Literarily, and I've waited a long time to write a book I would be really proud of, so I feel like I've done it this time, and it's just coincidental. It's a big commercial success. But I decided to use these hot flashes as my metaphor for a book and as the imagery in this book and in my own life to use those periods of hot flashes, those 30, 40 seconds of supreme discomfort and heat, fever, to think about life. And the life and that I've lived and shared with my friends and that my generation of women had been through. So I both used it. I used them for a lot of different things. And I had to come this far in my life before I could have these sudden illuminations and kind of lightning type understandings of the past and the present and take a moment, the time for reflection, use these periods of heat for a time for reflection about the past and what we can do in the future.
So for a woman, it's really the problem of middle age is compounded by not only the physical change, but the chronological change. You can look at the calendar and say, oh my God, I'm 50 years old and I haven't done what I want to do, or I haven't started yet. I've been meaning to get around to it, but I haven't done it. So it's a dual problem for a woman, isn't it?
It is. We have to come to peace with our pasts and our presents, I think, before we can really attack the future. And for a lot of us, these last years have been difficult. More than half of my group, our marriages have ended in divorce. Our long 20, 25-year marriages have ended in divorce. Our kids are grown. Our nests are empty. And we've got to pick up those pieces and reconcile ourselves to them and make peace with the past so we can proceed with our lives. And it's a costly way to learn the lesson that you have to depend exclusively upon yourself. And then maybe you can expand to your girlfriends. But you can't look to your children or your husbands or your lovers to sustain you spiritually, psychologically, physically. You have to do it on your own. Everybody's alone out here. And it was hard for my generation of women who grew up in the 50s, where we were told that, you know, there would be a Prince Charming and he would take care of us and replace the big daddies we were already overly dependent on. We believe that. It's a real hard old habit to kick, the belief that somebody out there is going to take care of us. And we've had to learn it. And women have had to help each other learn it and get through the process of learning it, because it's a rough road. And somehow, you know, we're getting a little tired here, and I don't know how many more surprises they have for us, but we're hanging in. We're great adapters. We're super survivors. We're just, we're a very nice generation of women, I think.
Let's talk a little bit about you. There's a short biographical essay that was in the publicity package, but I'd like for you to tell me on tape a little bit about yourself and where you're from and where you were educated.
Was born and grew up in Minneapolis, Minnesota, and graduated from the university there at age 19 and went to University of Chicago, where I did a master's degree in American literature and flew as a stewardess for Delta Airlines at the same time.
You got out just in time.
Right. And
before the engines conked out.
Actually, they had the greatest safety record of any airline in the United States up to the 60s.
Yes, they did. When you were growing up in Minneapolis, what kind of family? A bookish family?
Bookish family, right.
What did they do?
My dad's a criminal lawyer. My mom was a housewife, And I, of course, saw adventure, excitement, and power, passion, everything on the male side. This is what my dad went out every day to do, and my mother made a lot of macaroni casseroles with grated cheese on top, and had her book review club came, and we had big discussions about what kind of salad, tuna or salmon. And so I saw a big dichotomy between the female and male roles, and I had to opt for the male side because I wanted to have a little more action and adventure. So, but unfortunately, I sort of thought men brought the adventure into our lives. And if you got a good, frisky guy, you could have a lot more life experiences and a lot more action. So I started looking for a man early on, but writing. I always thought that I wanted to do. And I kept writing and looking for a man and competing with some very nice girlfriends for good dates on Saturday night. It was a real Saturday night special that we were always after. And you know, it seems to me I married right after graduate school, and we moved to Washington, and I started my doctorate in American literature and started having babies. I had three babies sort of close together. And got
What did this do to you in terms of writing? You had to put things on hold to a degree.
A lot on hold, but the one place I could steal hours from was sleep time, nighttime. So between midnight and 6 in the morning, I often stole a few hours to write. I was also teaching full-time at American University, raising these kids. My husband started an institute and was very involved in the anti-war and civil rights movement, and I joined him in a lot of those. It was the 60s were a wild decade for us. We met some of the most interesting and creative people in the country. We kept weird hours, and, you know, everybody came out of the closet You know, it was all out there in the open. And the sex that had been such a big sin in the 50s, and if you weren't a virgin, you hid it from your very best friend. And, you know, I don't know how many virgins they were. We're never going to get an accurate count because, you know, everybody was lying and it was so secret. Secret sex, and here we've come in 30 years from secret sex to safer sex. I mean, we've been through every sexual change available.
Well, there were major problems in the periods before the early 1960s. In most states, contraception was illegal, and abortion was illegal, and so it put women in a very unequal level with men, because men didn't have to take the risk that women did.
Unwanted,
and I think that created a very repressed. I'm a product of the 1950s. Yeah, I was in high school and college in the 50s, and it was a difficult time.
Terrible. Terrible, and women really suffered a lot during that period.
So did men.
Yeah, but, you know, when there was an unwanted pregnancy, it was the woman who had to bear it, and, you know, there were unwed mothers, and as you note, the man got sort of walked off.
Well, that's true, but it created an artificial relationship between men and women, a repressed sexuality.
Oh, you're talking about all that, putting out and, you know, escalating, necking and petting as the relationship extended, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It was weird. It was sick. It was too much.
By the same token, I have a feeling that this other decade that I missed out on.
Missed the 60s?
the late 67. No, maybe I didn't. I don't know. But then it seemed to go the other way so that things got out of control sexually.
And then the sex was just all over the place. It was so sexy, it was hardly even sexy anymore.
I remember these. I remember I was looking at the film of the Woodstock, the documentary, sometime ago, and here are all these nude people in front of everybody bathing or doing whatever they were doing. And
making love in that movie, too.
That seemed to me going a little too far.
A little too far. We went with the backswing, the whiplash of history, right? It went crazy. Destroyed a lot of marriages, a lot of relationships in the 60s. And when, you know, this kind of casual sex did not necessarily have profoundly good consequences, it made us kind of crazy. And people got off on, you know, into drugs and drinking and casual sex and orgiastic living. It was not necessarily a good, healthy reaction to the 50s, the secretness and the sinfulness of sex in the 50s.
It's a good thing our country is so big that, you know, so many people were involved in drugs and really couldn't function very well except in a spontaneous way. I mean, like spontaneous rallies against the war and this sort of thing. Some of them seemed to be
well-planned,
orchestrated.
Spontaneous.
Well, some of them seemed, there were always leaders who were dedicated against the war, but I had this feeling in covering a lot of the demonstrations. I was not a participant. I was an observer as a journalist during this period, that a lot of it was just a kick. And a lot of people were angry. There's no question about that, but of course, we are a nation of followers to a degree, and I had this feeling that a great many people were involved in it, but because it was the thing to do. No? Yes? Because you were...
I mean, this is an old argument. Yeah. I don't know. You might
well, this is just an observation of mine, but you were so involved in it, I don't know that you could even speak...
Okay, maybe. I don't have much perspective, in fact. I tell you, I mean... Personally, myself, speaking for myself and my most close and intimate friends, some of whom are very famous, we missed the dedication of that period and the sense of mission and purpose, and we floundered a little bit when it all, you know, began to wind down into the remnants of Watergate. I mean, we really lost a sense of history and proportion ourselves at that time.
Yeah, there was an advantage. I didn't like the 60s very much. But there was an advantage to them over the 80s in that there was a political orientation.
Absolutely.
That doesn't seem to be present.
And a coherence and a commitment. And when you lose that, I think people need that, you know. It's their public form of security. And people need that and like it. It gives you a sense of a greater self, and it gives you a higher, higher objective than, you know, your own personal comfort. I think it feels good for people to have something outside of themselves. Maybe it used to be religion gave it to us, but it was important.
Well, somewhere along the line, while you were raising children and starting families and this sort of thing, and teaching, the compulsion to write took hold, and you... did write a novel. When was that? Loose Ends, wasn't it?
Yeah, in 1972, I published my first novel. I wrote that on the coffee table while rocking kids. It was one of like those old pictures of the mother rocking the cradle with one foot and cooking a large stew for 29 other people. And I did it. It was real hard.
Tell me about that book.
I still like that book. The next two I disowned like bad children. I liked Loose Ends. It was a lot of the feeling of the 60s, coming through the 60s. Having our babies during the 60s and, you know, teaching them how to read off T-shirts and hanging out and hanging in. And I still am pretty proud of that book. It was okay for a first novel. And then I just went astray, literarily speaking, and wrote two books I didn't mean to write.
What do you mean you didn't mean to write?
I don't know. I was offered contracts and we needed the money. And I said, oh, that sounds like a good idea without really thinking it through. And I think I lacked a certain self-awareness, literary self-awareness, and I didn't take myself all that seriously, although I wanted desperately to be an American writer, a serious American novelist. I wanted that desperately. And I never had much self-confidence, and I didn't trust my talents and my instincts. And I had to get to my mid-40s before I decided that I can finally do this, and I'm going to. But it took me a few years till I got my hot flash to realize I had something in hand and it was going to be good. And from that moment on, I knew I could do this, and I knew I wanted to, and I knew out there were a lot of women who wanted to hear something like this, and there are. And I don't know if it's selling like hula hoops, but I'll tell you, there's a big response, and it feels so good that I had something to say to these women.
I'm always surprised and overwhelmed sometimes when I hear about a writer at the age of 25, a mailer, a styron, I mean, there are a whole batch of them. I can't think of them off the top of my head. Gore Vidal, Vance Borghele.
These guys
in their early 20s, turning out these wonderful books. And it seems to me that even now, if I were to sit down to try to write something, I might have a hard time assessing what I'm going to say. At 25, I certainly wouldn't have had anything to say. But now at my the male version of yourself, you know, the opposite of hot flashes or whatever, I think I would have more to say because I've had this all these years to look back on. But when you're 25, what do you really? It's, I think these guys are geniuses, and women too. There are not too many, there haven't been too many women writers in their early years that I can think of off the top of my head. But
there are now. There's a whole crew of young women.
Yeah. Oh, there's no question about it.
Okay, why? I mean, I tell you, women, I think, are easily intimidable, or were in the 50s. And I wanted it so bad I could taste a good American novel within myself, and I wanted to go for it. And I just didn't have, you know, I mean, you could eat your heart. I could eat my heart out now. Why didn't I just try to do it? But I was intimidated by those guys, the Mailers and the Styrons and those folks. And
but to go back to what I was saying, at that age, well, you were intimidated by them. I mean,
I don't think they had that many. Well, they had the war they had been through, the Second World War. But I don't think they had that many more experiences. We were just more reticent about talking about them and committing them to paper. Well, women were writing, but then they became the literary establishment, and you had to go up against them, and that was rough. And you know, for a long time, when I met some of these men, and I was pleased to meet them. And I followed their work diligently and their careers and their development. And I always wanted to say I'm a writer, but you can't. That's like saying you're going up to somebody and saying you're 6 feet two when you're 5 foot two. You can't make somebody believe you're a writer just because you intend to be. And that hurt a lot. It's just personally speaking. I mean, I wanted to do what they were doing, and somehow I couldn't get it together, and the kids and the marriage and the full-time teaching jobs and the writing. I did a lot of freelance journalism, and I ran this house and all the movement people slept over, and I wanted it so bad, and I couldn't get it for myself. I was just too busy. You can't really, they're mutually exclusive. Life, you know, keeps art out or something. You can't blend them together very well.
But fiction is hard, isn't it? I mean, it's not non-fiction. If somebody were to give you an assignment, you were doing freelance writing, they give you a non-fiction assignment, you have very specific things you can sink your teeth in. But when you're talking about fiction, you're looking at your typewriter, and there's a blank page, and everything that goes on the page comes out of your mind.
You got to wander, and there's false starts, and it's like, you know, traditionally what people say about writing it, you got to have some time and space to do it, and a little bit of quiet, a little bit, and then you can start to do it. And I had to go real down deep to get that book, but I knew what I was going for. Maybe there's a new consciousness because of the age I've reached, or a new self-confidence that has come very much from the feminist movement, and an awareness and a sense of confidence and strength. And I can look unto myself, and I can do what I want, what I have to do now.
When you started writing Hot Flashes, did you knew you wanted to write the autobiography of your generation? That's for certain. And you had an idea of the type of women that you wanted to include, their counterparts to yourself to a degree, but how did you block out this novel? Did you know where it was going from the beginning to the end?
Did you
it by ear as you wrote?
I didn't quite know how I was going to get the women together. And finally I got them around the kitchen table, and I thought, why are they here? And then I had to kill off the center of their circle so that they could mourn and grieve and think and learn. And it seemed real right that because now we're facing those kinds of losses in the not too different distant future. And I wanted to test the mettle of my women friends against a serious situation. And I was worried it sounded like the Big Chill, but the more I thought about it, it seemed like an appropriate vehicle to test them and to allow them to think and reflect and reveal the autobiography of their group of women. And so I went with for it.
It is a little scary, though, isn't it? I mean, one of the first pages I look at is the obituary page of the New York Times. When I get my college alumni magazine, I think I flip to the obituaries, and the horrible thing about that is that I'm running into people I knew.
Yeah. So that's our next, that's the next scene we're facing, the next change. But I think we have a little more equanimity about ourselves and a little more composure. And we've got wonderful girlfriends. Our friends are very great friends. And we're, and don't get me wrong, we still like guys a lot. We're your basic 50s girls, you know. Saturday night is just not another night of the week. It's really an important night. And we're fiercely heterosexual, and, you know, and there are some very good men around, and so we're still in there.
Thank God. That's really important. Well, to kind of wrap things up, Barbara Raskin, this is a wonderful book. How does it feel? This book has started to move. I understand that it's going to be on the New York Times bestseller list. How does it feel becoming a best-selling writer?
Sweet. Every minute of it is so sweet.
I bet it feels just as good at the age of 50-odd as it would have if you were 25.
Oh, got to feel better. Talk about delayed gratification. Oh, no, it couldn't be better.
And you're going on a publicity tour? What is that like?
10 cities. Well, I don't know. Large limousines pull up, and I slip inside, and it's fine. I can adapt to almost anything.
Well, I was talking to Herbert Gold a while back. He had a his big book was called Fathers some years ago,
yes.
And
they
drove him around in a limousine. First and last time.
Oh, that was that.
The
that
publisher.
Time. Uh-huh.
Yeah, the publisher drove him around in a limousine. First and last time, I might add. And they even set up interviews at his hotel room where people would come one after another and all of this. And he said, he echoed Andy Warhol, you know. It was like being famous for that brief amount of time. And he's written,
a
he must have written three dozen books.
A Girl of 40.
It's a wonderful book.
It's a real nice book.
It's a wonderful book. And I met her. He usually comes in every time he's in New York to say hi or we have a drink or something. And as a matter of fact, he was a writer in residence at City College this mm-hmm. past fall, but he liked it. I mean, it was a really a nice thing. He hasn't been able to duplicate it.
Well, it's not, of course. That's he peaked early. I'm sorry to say, don't say that. Okay, and that was, I think, that's hard too.
Yeah, he was in his early 20s when he wrote his first book, which he says wasn't very good. But I never read that first book, and it's.
I think he feels a little dislocated and a little left out of this East Coast, you know, clan we have here.
Well, he claims he doesn't.
He claims he doesn't?
He claims he loves San Francisco.
Oh, I think, yeah, but I think he's a little peripheral. I think that must hurt. I don't know, speak from my own experience.
Well, there's another writer who, this is just a coincidental, Avery Corman, has just written a book called 50. Did you read it?
Yep.
This book wasn't as... It's not as literary as yours and not as well done, but it did have a good feeling for me because my own age, this does mean something. So I felt that as well. So it's interesting that these two books, his from a male point of view to a degree and yours from the woman's point of view, came at the same time. But I guess 50, you know, that when you think about it, that is that, you know, that's half a century and that's almost... It's more important than 40.
Yeah. And also this year, more Americans turned 50 than ever before in our demographic history. And similarly, and somehow this is different, although statistically I bum out at this, not only did more people turn 50 this year, but there are more 50-year-old people in the country than ever before. That's somehow different, mathematics or statistics, not my. That's different.
I like 50-year-old people. They know my music. You know, if I say K-Star, you know, you got to know who K-Star is. So, I've talked to young. I enjoy talking to younger people, and I enjoy reading their books and having them in. and knowing what they're doing and what they're saying. But I don't know. I have a feeling that there shouldn't be a generation gap, but I have a feeling we get hooked on our generation, and we tend to think about it a lot, and the 50s for us, of course, and the early 60s perhaps, a very important period, the most formative period in our lives. So the music is remembered, mm-hmm. and the books are remembered, and the personalities are remembered. But the new people don't know them. I mean, the new folks coming up, they don't know. They know their own music. And so it's kind of, I guess there will always be a generation gap of some kind.
Also the ties of a generation are very important and rich and resonant bindings for us, I think.
Older people who try to bridge the generation gap by letting their hair grow long or taking up dope and doing the things, I think they make fools out of themselves in a way. I think we have to age with as much grace and dignity as possible, even if it means enjoying K-Star. It's a wonderful book, Barbara Raskin.
Thank you. I'm glad you liked it. Thank you.